Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Divrei Hayomim Aleph Perek Chof, the 20th chapter in the first book of Divrei Hayomim. This really is coming to the end of David HaMelech's conquests, and although we've heard about different nations and territories, we now hear this coming to a culmination. Our Perek is only 8 psukim long and reflects two different sections in Sefer Shmuel Beis. The first 3 psukim are the last war with Ammon. Ammon is the nation to the south of Israel, and just as a reminder, what has happened in the last perek has been that Ammon first embarrassed the messengers of David HaMelech. Then when seeing that a war was imminent, they set up a war with Israel. They rented mercenaries from Aram. Aram was sent back and Ammon fled. And they weren't conquered at this point. Now we hear about the conquest. We hear David HaMelech says, "Vatiyu teshuvas hashana," at the end of this year, as the Malachim are going out, this means to say it's referring to the springtime when you're now able to access the roads and armies can march. Yoav, the general, takes his army to Ammon, and he lays siege on Rabbah, which is their main city, and he destroys it upon succeeding in breaking that siege. And at this point in time, we're told that David HaMelech takes the crown of their king from his head, and it weighs a talent of gold. It has a beautiful stone in it, and David HaMelech wears it. Vatihi al Rosh David, is worn by David. And everything else is, there's a lot of loot which is taken from Rabbah. And we hear about how David HaMelech says, Vayosar b'magero v'charitzei ha-barzel b'mageros. That he, Vayosar, is a hard word to translate. But ultimately, it sounds like he straightened or he hurt the people with these different implements, those implements being a saw or different types of harder instruments. So let's just stop for a moment. This parallel is to be found in Shmuel Beis Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Aleph and the end of Perek Yud Beis from Pasukim Chavav onwards. A few basic questions. How could David HaMelech wear such a heavy crown? If the crown weighs a talent of gold, no human is going to be able to put that on his head. So Rashi says maybe he did wear it, or maybe it had some sort of magnetic device in it which helped alleviate the weight. Fascinating. An Evan Shoeves. Or perhaps he says, as in some of the Arab kingdoms where the king's crown actually is supported above the throne, the king sits underneath it rather than wearing it. Different possibilities. What does it mean that he brought out these iron saws and these instruments, threshing boards and axes? What does it mean? So the Ralbag says, and the Radak seems to also go in the same line, is that this was torture. David HaMelech, actually, the people of Ammon were so bad and were such an upstart that he needed to make an example of them. And he used this torture as a deterrent. It's very hard to swallow that. But that we have to also recognize anachronistically. We're looking at it from the perspective of post-Geneva conventions, where the world is a different place. But that's possibly one way of reading it. It is worthwhile noting that the JPS in its footnotes, the 1985 edition, says that the word that's ambiguous here is the word vayosar. And the way it's understood is that he cut them. That's the way it's understood. But he says that it's an unclear meaning. And so it could mean that he set them to work, which means that not torture, but rather he made them as workers under him. It is interesting to note that the Jastrow dictionary takes the word naser and in its simplest form, which means to cut. So it does relate perhaps to some sort of torture or some sort of removing of their leaders. You'll notice, by the way, in this section, what is missing is Perek Yud Aleph and the first part of Yud Beis in Shmuel Beis. That's the story of David and Bathsheba. It's during this war, when David HaMelech is not on the battlefield, that the whole episode of Bathsheba ensues. And it's Uriah Achiti, the husband of Bathsheba, who's sent to the war front. It's this war front that's being sent to, he's sent to over here. As Barbanel explains in the introduction, as we looked at, the focus of Divrei Hayomim is not going to be all the difficult parts of David HaMelech's life. The focus is actually connecting us to the Davidic kingdom, and so we're going to leave out, Ezra's going to omit, the parts which are not going to be positive reflections of David, or perhaps unnecessary in terms of the agenda of the Sefer of Divrei Hayomim. We now move to the second part of the Perek, which is Psukim Dalet to Ches, the last 5 Psukim, and we're told that after this, there is a number of wars which ensue with the Philistines. We hear about them conquering Sibchi HaChushasi and Sipai Hamildi, who are giants, and they were quelled. And we hear also about how Elchanan ben Yair conquers Lachmi, the brother of Goliath, Hagiti. He had the holder of his sword was like this large beam used in the weaving machine. So he's obviously a great stature in the same way. And then we hear about another war in Gat, which is against a man of Ishmida, or Medon. He's a man of large numbers, and in fact, he has 24 digits. So he has six fingers, six on each hand, including the thumb, and six digits on each of his feet. So he's, you know, genetically a terrifying person in size, in stature. And he was also born to Rapha, we're told. And he curses Israel, and Yonatan ben Shima, the brother of David, he manages to kill this person. So we hear about these four different battles which ensue. So it seems to be a few basic questions. First of all, the parallel perek is perek Chof Aleph at the end in Sefer Shmuel Beis. If you want to take a look at it over there, the question that really starts off is, when is Vayiach Areichein? When was the afterwards? When did this actually take place? So the Malbim points out that this is referring to after all the later wars of David. This is when this takes place. It should be clear to us that Dirayamim is missing a number of events in the middle. So we're missing also the Amnon and Tamar event, the Avshalom rebellion, the Sheva ben Bichri rebellion, David HaMelech handing over the sons of Shaul HaMelech to the Givonites. All these events, which take up almost 10 prakim in Sefer Shmuel Beis, are omitted over here. Most of them are seen as a continuation of the Batsheva event and the punishment for it, which is perhaps why they are left out, but a lot of them reflect negatively on David, and that's not the point of what Ezra is trying to convey here, which is why they are omitted. Another interesting point is if you look at Perek Chof Aleph in Sefer Shmuel Beis, there's one other battle which is omitted in and amongst these battles, and that is the battle where David HaMelech is able to conquer another person by the name of Yishbi, another of these giants, the fourth battle. What is interesting about it is that Avishai has to come to the help of David, and that's when David HaMelech is recessed from the battlefield. So it's an embarrassing point for David, and that's also perhaps why it is left out here. When describing the battle against this person, Lachmi, or the brother of Goliath, it's a little bit ambiguous because in Sefer Shmuel Beis, it's a little bit presented somewhat differently in the adjectives. We hear about over there that Elchanan ben Yari, who is an Orig from the Orgim, from the weavers himself, from Beis Lechem, conquers Goliath. So it's a little bit ambiguous. The Mephoreshim point out that there were two deaths here. One was Goliath and one was his brother. But the emphasis of the Malbim points out is that both of the people who killed these giants, who were brothers, were in fact from Beis Lechem, like David HaMelech, and this person in Elchanan ben Yair. And both of these, the people who were killed, were these Philistine brothers who cursed Israel. So it's meant to sort of engender a sense of fear and perspective. And understanding also the similarities of those who conquered them. We were told that these children, these four, are the children of Rapha. Who is Rapha? What is Rapha? So Radak says Rapha is not a person. Rapha is actually the name of the family, Rephaim. Rephaim means giants, as the Torah talks about. So we have one family with this very, very large and very, very powerful gene in them. Barbanel argues and says, no, maybe she was a woman whose name was Rapha, and she had four children with these genes, and all of them were giants that were killed by David and his Giborim. The ones we hear about here are Yishbi, Sipai, Lachmi, if that's his name, and Ishamida, the man of measure, or Ishamidon, as the Sefer Shmuel points it out. And we, of course, the fifth one would be Goliath, which is omitted primarily in Sefer Dirayamim and is talked about in Sefer Shmuel. And the general thrust of this this part of the story seems to be, as Abravanel points out, is the great strength that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to David to be able to wipe out these imminent threats, these people who really are a terror on the horizons, people who use their brute force to curse the God of Israel, to curse Israel, and how David HaMelech and his brethren were able to remove them as well. And this now sort of, in a certain sense, brings us up to date where Sefer Shmuel is now finishing up, and where we are now at the point where in Divrei HaYamim we've missed a number of episodes, and we're now coming over further towards moving towards building the Beis HaMikdash, and that's going to be, so to speak, our next step. This closes Perek Chof. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.